microphones are on.
And the recording is on.
Just because the Board of Supervisors is now in session, Supervisor Costa.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we have Chaplain Mason, please.
Let's pray. Our gracious Creator, we thank you for the blessing of the beautiful place that we get to live. We thank you for our community, for our people, and for these leaders. We ask that you would grant them wisdom as they make decisions today, that it would all be to the blessing of the people of our county. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
I'm here.
Supervisor Howell?
Present.
Supervisor Harris?
Present.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Here.
And Supervisor Overt?
Present.
And real quick, though, just the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, Siskiyou Power Authority, and County Service Area 4, and receives no additional compensation.
Thank you. Presentations from the public. This time select is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Do we have any presentations from the public?
I have no blue cards here. It was for an item.
Good morning. My name is Stacey Jackson. I'm the interim chief probation officer for the county, and I'm sorry I did not complete a blue card. I will do so. I just wanted to brief the board on a couple of bills that have come before the legislature at this time. Neither one of them have passed too far out of committee, but for your information only, and I'm not asking for the board to do anything other than be apprised of what they are. One of them is AB 1213, and it's introduced by Assemblyman Stefani. This bill would put victims first in the matter of restitution. And it's a really important thing for us to consider when we're in the justice system about our victims, because we appear to have slid away from what the victims need in a lot of the matters. So I'm very excited that they're bringing victim restitution back into the forefront. And the second bill is SB 357, and it was proposed and written by Senator Menjivar. Now, I will add the caveat that this bill is, as all bills, you know, as a result of something that's happened or some behavior that's happened somewhere, and is specifically targeted for counties that are over 3.5 million in population. So it really wouldn't affect our county should it go through, but it would affect LA. The short-term consequences of this bill are not affecting us. However, the big question is what's next after this bill. So the letters that I'm providing you today are from CPOC, the California, the Chief Probation Officers of California, and they're our stance on these two bills. And I just wanted to let you know what was going on, and our new chief, when that person comes in, will also be keeping you apprised of those things as well. So thank you very much for your time, and I do have these copies for you to review. Would I give them to you, Madam Clerk?
Yes, and I can distribute them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Any other public comment in the room? Any online?
None online.
Moving on to consent agenda.
I'd like to pull 5J.
Okay, Item J. And we're pulling five.
Through the chair, yes. Angela Davis, County Administrator, would like to pull item 5E.
This is the board for the remainder.
I move to approve the remainder of the consent agenda. Items E and J.
Second.
Alrighty.
Call for vote.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopstedt?
Aye.
And Supervisor Okrin?
Aye. Let's start with E.
Haley Hudson, Deputy County Administrator. For item 5E, I would like to amend the agenda language to strike the words human services and replace them with Health and Human Services Behavioral Health Division. And those are the only updates.
Okay, wishes of the board?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, hang on. Valenzuela, Copsa, thank you. Supervisor Valenzuela? Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopstedt?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ober?
Aye. Item J.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, on the letter from CPH, second page, where it talks about the award amounts, I'm just curious on the nutrition services and administration-based funding, is that all salaries, or is that actually, how do I want to say, product that actually gets to those that it serves?
Thank you, and thank you. I appreciate that you've given me a heads up about grants. So Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. So as with almost everything we do, the majority is in salaries, right? The WIC program also rents space in each community it serves. So there's 8 sites that are rented. There's a coordinator for a manager for that program, 4 staff that are dedicated to that program, and then a consultant, a nutrition consultant. So the majority of the funding goes to staffing and the rental of the sites.
So does it, the WIC program, does it provide to a client actual dollars that can buy product for nutrition, or is it just education?
Yes, it's both.
It does.
And as well as lactation support, right, around breastfeeding.
Okay. So is it mainly education, but not product, I'll call it?
I'll have to get you that breakdown.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it.
It's both.
Okay. And then one other, on the farmer's market nutrition program, $300. What is that for, just a permit?
I'll have to get back to you on that, too.
Okay. Thank you. Do you think you could get back to this today?
Yes.
Okay. Then if the chair can hold it, please. Thank
yes.
you.
Okay.
We'll go number one.
Okay.
Set that aside until you let us know. Thank you. Okay. With that, we'll move on to departmental requests, item 6. Wait. Yes.
Through the chair, staff has an off-agenda item that they, an urgency item that they're seeking to add to the board's agenda today.
Okay.
So this is an item to be added to the agenda for the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. And the title of the item is Resolution of the Board of Directors of the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District declaring an emergency pursuant to Public Contract Code Section 22050B, delegating authority to the Executive Director or a designee to enter into emergency public works contract for the repair of the roof and main office of the general store at Lake Siskiyou Camp Resort located at 4239 West A. Barr Road, Mount Shasta, California. The reason for the urgency is that after the posting of the agenda for the Board of Supervisors meeting of May 6, 2025, it was determined that an emergency resolution delegating authority to the executive director or designee to enter into an emergency public works contract for repairs at the general store at Lake Siskiyou could not await a future board meeting and would be needed imminently. The next board meeting is not until May 20th, 2025, and the action regarding this matter is needed before the next regularly scheduled board meeting. Therefore, FLED district staff requests that the board determine by a two-thirds vote of the members present today that this is an urgency item pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.2B2, and it be added to the FLED district's agenda.
Thank you. Wishes of the board?
So moved. Second.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Are they acting as the flood directors in this case to take
yes.
add this to the agenda?
Yes.
Okay, so Director Valenzuela, Director Kobsev, to add to flood agenda. Thank you. All righty, Director Valenzuela, Director Haupt,
aye.
Director Harris,
aye.
Director Kobsev,
aye.
And Director Ogren,
aye. Now, moving on to departmental requests, item 6A, Community Development Planning Division, discussion, direction, and possible action regarding proposed Bailey Hill Road Abandonment Project. Good morning,
Haley. Good morning, Haley Lane, Planning Director. So, the Planning Department has received a request from Mr. DeClerc for the county to abandon Bailey Hill Road in its entirety, which consists of approximately 1.28 miles of paved fronted roadway along the I-5 corridor. So under state law, when a road abandonment application is received, staff is required to bring the matter to the Board of Supervisors for consideration. Upon receiving a request, at its discretion, the Board of Supervisors may choose to initiate proceedings for the road abandonment. So to summarize, should the board wish to initiate proceedings, then it would kickstart the process for the road abandonment analysis, so go through the Planning Commission first, and then ultimately to the Board of Supervisors for the decision of the road abandonment. That being said, staff is not recommending to move forward to initiate proceedings. We did take an initial look at the findings that have to be made per the Streets and Highway Code, and just to generally summarize, there are three findings, one of that being that the road abandonment conforms with the Siskiyou County General Plan. Staff looked at the general plan and it conflicts with policies identified in the scenic highways element of the general plan. Finding number two is that the roadway is not useful as a non-motorized transportation facility. You know, there can potentially be non-motorized use along Bailey Hill Road, you know, so it's not clear at this time whether or not it affects non-motorized transportation. And three, that the roadway is unnecessary for present or prospective public use. You know, as it is a paved frontage roadway, essentially off of I-5, it does seem that it is necessary for present or prospective use. Likewise, you know, in emergency situations like when I-5 closes, folks may park there, you know, and wait for, you know, the roadway to open up again. So there is a potential for that. And, you know, other factors to consider, you know, outside of the findings that ultimately have to be made, should the board wish for us to initiate proceedings, other things to consider is that since it is a public roadway, if we do remove the 1.28 miles of roadway that does, that is removed from our public roadway system, and we do not receive gas tax dollars for that as well. So, just something to consider, but at that, you know, that's pretty much all I have to say, so happy to answer any comments related to that.
Got a couple. In your initial staff report on one of the initial findings, it stated it does appear to be for public use. What is the public use?
Like, how is it defined? Or what is the... So we looked at, annual average daily traffic. And according to Caltrans for 2023, the AADT for Interstate 5 adjacent to Bailey Hill Road is 8,400. That, you know, one can
can assume that on average 8,400 vehicles pass by Bailey Roadway traveling northbound. But we could also potentially, if the board wishes, maybe under Public Works get a counter out there to see what the real-time numbers are for that right now. But that's just, again, you know, with our initial stab of the data that we have available.
In my mind, what I'm trying to weigh is, I'm assuming that the road doesn't access additional private parcels.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the use then? I mean, it's not like it's a scenic drive to take.
Sure.
Yeah, I know the road. I mean, I'm trying to, in my mind, come up with what the actual use is on that road, other than for the clerk's operation itself.
Sure. Yeah, and at this time, right, my understanding is, yes, the clerk is the only property owner that has, most of the access off Bailey Hill Road. So I would just say maybe we could get a counter out there to see what the, real-time data is for now.
So it doesn't meet the general plan to meet 20.1?
Yes. So we have a scenic highways element currently adopted under our current general plan. And so I'll just, read our analysis from the staff report. It identifies Interstate 5 from the Oregon line to its intersection with Highway 3 in Wairika being a scenic freeway. The proposed project site is located within the scenic corridor. Objective number 3 of the scenic highways element as it relates to scenic corridors is to provide multiple recreational uses, trails and roadside rests, observation points, and picnicking areas. The scenic highways element defines the rights of way of scenic routes to include the paved roadways and structures and adjacent lands required for roadway protection, storm drainage, public utilities, pedestrian travel, and roadside planting. Where appropriate, the rights of way may also include public roadside rest, cycling, riding, and hiking trails. If the county were to abandon the public right of way, the area would no longer be available for public uses listed above.
And I guess I have a more pointed question, I guess, from the road department perspective on the funds collected on the road. I understand the loss if we just completely abandon the road, but what if we would pick up those miles somewhere else in the county that would better serve the public?
Well, that would be an option. I don't know what roads we would pick up. The total revenue, approximate total revenue for that section of road is about $2,400 for Bailey Hill. We're spending the 5-year average is about $1,710. So it's not a huge difference. There is a little bit of deferred maintenance on that roadway. Should we hold it, we're looking at a $50,000 or $60,000 chip seal job. Those are the numbers.
Is there other significant infrastructure on that road?
There is. There's a bridge on Bailey Hill Road. I could give you the number if you're interested. But it is in fair to poor condition. So should we abandon, we need to figure out a way to disposition that asset. I'm not entirely certain of how to do that yet.
Poor condition, what's the projected cost of the county to turn that up to?
So this is a very rough estimate, right? Just by going out and looking at the bridge ahead of this meeting, but it looks like it'd probably be, with permitting and everything else, $700,000.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Deeney, if you would, for the record, we just need your name.
Tom Deeney, Director of Public Works.
Thank you.
And then my last question. So should this go forward, what's the next step?
So next step would be we would set a public hearing for this to be heard at the Planning Commission level. And then the Planning Commission, we would go through the analysis of the findings, and then they would recommend whether or not to move forward to the Board of Supervisor level for ultimate approval.
What level of CEQA is involved?
CEQA review would occur both at the Planning Commission level and the Board of Supervisor level. I would assume we would utilize an existing facilities exemption for CEQA. There would be no necessary additional analysis for this project.
Thank you.
I guess I've spent a lot of time on this road. I hate that road. As far as road work goes. My position here is, one, we don't have any county connectivity to this road. It's not like it connects to other county roads. It was kind of, excessive to have to go up the freeway, kick off there, be able to plow the road, maintain the road. There's no real public use there. Unfortunately, with the way our society is today, allowing people to park there has not been great either for trash and people using the bathroom, people being able to park there and then access the dirt clerk's property to do, illegal things. That's not fantastic for me. So, if this road had some more connectivity, kind of like Jefferson Road, at least connects to the Hill Road up there, then this would be more like, okay, I can see saving this one. And then the money, I can't make the money make sense. So if we're taking in $2,400 a year, we need a $43,000 chip seal and a $700,000 bridge. By the time that you even started to get close to making that up with the $2,400 a year, you're going to be right back to needing more chip seal and more improvements. So this is going to end up being a money pit before we're done for something that doesn't serve the public. And so it's very difficult for me, with having road experience and, specifically that district, to desire to keep this road. I completely agree with Supervisor Hawk. If we could find another road that we could pick up, a close amount of miles and serve more people and solve a problem for, a private landowner, then I truly believe we should move forward with this.
Thank you.
Not familiar with where it's at. Was there a map somewhere, or have I missed it?
Sure, in the staff report.
In the last one. Okay,
if you look at pages 4, 5, and 6.
So can I suppose it costs?
Go ahead.
So I actually am familiar with the road, only back on top of the days. Serves only one entity. I always cautious about unintended consequences, but that road was probably there before I went through. There was probably a more generic reason for that road. I'll go along with supporting this, but I think the issue for me is the road, the bridge disposition. Mm-hmm. I think that for me has to be addressed before I can finalize that, because the last thing I want to do is we're still on the hook for it. If that's the case, then why give up the road? Mm-hmm. I do think, particularly since rural schools funding hasn't been addressed yet, road department funding is going to go down. So this could turn into be a money pit. We do have a county policy, if I recall, of not taking in more roads. I think that becomes problematic, trying to say, okay, we're going to lose this, we're going to find it somewhere else. There's plenty of places where constituents want to be annexed into that. I don't want to play that game, to be honest with you. So that's just where I'm at.
Thank you.
So, this is the request of the property owner, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And should this prevail and go through, there isn't an unintended consequence future that comes back to say, G County, why did you abandon this road if there's a fire and somebody doesn't get out? I'm just saying, what's the potential for that?
Potentially, I would just answer that staff has to look into this further when we really start to drill down on the findings. Should the board wish for staff to move forward for us to kind of take a look at those factors? And I'm sure Planning Commission would have similar questions as well.
So, this comes up fairly frequently on the private road, can it block emergency access?
Yeah.
Fire, right?
Okay.
And Chief Roth is there if he disagrees.
Anything else?
No, I was just going to say that given what
concern is public safety, mostly in the wintertime. After living in that area and using the Bailey Hill overpass for 30-some years, and coming from the south every day from here, going home, I saw so many times when cars were stopped, trucks were stopped, four wide across that freeway, and emergency vehicles could not pass, and people used Bailey Hill Road for a way out and for a stop, for a way to get off the freeway and clear that road for emergency vehicles to pass. Not only to chain up, but just to get off the freeway and to stay there until the freeway opened up again. And I see that road as a necessity. I will also say on a personal note that I taught my kids how to ride their bikes on that road. So, not that it means anything personal to me, but from the public safety aspect of it, I think it is a necessity to keep that because there is no other way to get off the freeway there. It is a white spot in the road, but people cannot exit the freeway, and especially if Bailey Hill Overpass gets closed, because that then becomes private, there is no way to exit the freeway, and that becomes a real bottleneck there when it comes to emergency vehicles. And it is the bottom of basically the Siskiyou's, and that's it's just not a good place. If we do have a place where people can actually exit the freeway, we shouldn't eliminate that. I'm not really supporting this. I know the money's an aspect of it too, and I don't really want to give up any income that we can possibly get. It's just one more thing we're going to give up. So that's my take on it.
What do you mean?
Right. So where do we go? I do have a blue card for Mr. DeClerc, so
okay.
I should allow him
okay.
a chance to speak as well.
Steve DeClerc, the property owner, and I've been listening to this, and the other side of the freeway has a truck turnaround, and the overpass will not be closed because there's still, when you go up and down the overpasses, they have long runaways. We will take full responsibility and save the county some money so they won't have to chip seal every 10 years. The bridge, we will take responsibility for that too. So there is another exit if they do get off. The exit will not be closed. And if they get off that exit, they can go right over the overpass, and there's a great big turnaround that the trucks can use, people can park, and there's even room to park on the side of the freeways there. And they have a no... They've been blocking the freeways nowadays where they don't even let them get up to there. They've been stopping down in Redding or before and higher up in Oregon. So I don't see that being a problem. And any fires or anything, they already have access to our whole ranch. It's already burned down. And Caltrans right down the road, and they can come right up and come right in. They have keys to get in and everything. To our other parts of our ranch. So that's no problem. And it would leave we have been, I-5 is a bad road for criminals. We have had robberies. We've had our housekeeper held hostage with a gun. We've had SWAT teams up there, and this might eliminate some of that if it's a more of a private road. And we are the only owner on that whole road. It's just us. We will honor all easements. Power company, whoever has an easement, gets their easement. We're not taking anything away that way. And I don't know what else to say to you. It would just be a big plus for us. And it's going to save the county a lot of money because it needs to be chip sealed now. And then I think every 10 years it's supposed to be re-chip sealed. and that bridge, you don't want to pay $700,000 for that little bridge. Do you have any questions? No questions? Okay, thank you.
Hello. So what I would need from you all today is, a vote consensus on whether or not to initiate proceedings so staff could continue on taking it through the process through Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors.
Can you need a motion?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Make a motion to proceed with the process.
Second. Okay, will you call for a vote?
Alrighty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren?
No. Thank you, Haley. Moving on to item B, Community Development Fireburn Town Council, discussion, direction, possible action on the first reading of an ordinance to designate fire hazard severity zone map.
Well, good morning, Board. Rick Eane, Community Development Director. We also have some other partners in crime on this one.
Greg Roth, Unit Chief for the CAL FIRE Siskiyou Unit and County Fire Warden.
Frank Shoney, Director of Emergency Services at Siskiyou County.
Before you now is a proposed ordinance for the Local Response Area Fire Hazard Severity Zone map. Has been presented by the state of California for adoption off the basis of AB 63, or Senate Bill 63, excuse me. There's been looking discussion of this throughout. So you've seen the maps. This is for the board to adopt as an ordinance within the county as prescribed, as required by the state of California. I can speak to anything associated with the building department on this if you like. But your wishes.
Sure. Yeah, I can add something.
I'd love to say, but I'm waiting. So we're waiting for the chair.
I'm just waiting for it to start.
I'll just say that. You know, I wear two hats, and wearing my general county fire hat, my job appointed by you is to give you advice on fire-related matters. This is a fire-related matter. It wasn't something that we're bringing forward, but through legislation, we're faced with this map. And this map is not something new. The fire hazard severity zones were developed in the 80s for the SRA, which are already implemented in Siskiyou County. And this new legislation has tasked the fire marshal with making those zones within the LRA, which are smaller portions in Siskiyou County because the majority of Siskiyou County is either SRA or federal DPA. And those private lands within federal DPA already have to adhere to those SRA rules. So we're faced with either with adopting a map in these fire hazard severity zones. And at the end of the day, by adopting some sort of ordinance, it gives clear direction to the county, your county workers, your building department, because they're going to be tasked with telling the public what they need, the standard that needs to be built to. And without some sort of adoption or ordinance, it violates Chapter 7 of the Building Code, making it harder to understand how to move forward with building in Siskiyou County. By adopting an ordinance that gives your workers clear direction and the public clear direction on what the standard should be that they have to build to, that they'll be able to make better decisions and whether they can build or whether they should build. So I think that's the inherent part of the ordinance adoption and being able to serve Siskiyou County with some clear direction.
So what's the building code now? I thought we were already building to hardening factors that address that. They don't have clear direction now?
Yes, we do have clear direction, essentially through the building code, chapter 7A, the residential side, 337.
So what would this enhance on that? You can say it.
Nothing.
Okay.
The map exists. We are required by building code to address it, right? So,
but you are.
Yeah, currently we are within the state response area. Once these maps are in place, whether adopted or not, we will still have to adhere to the local response area maps and the high severity, the very high severity zones, which would require the moving installation for those new homes to be constructed. Currently, with the state response area, the medium, the high, and the very high severity all require blue standards for home construction.
So within, we're already doing
it. Yeah, correct. Okay. Within the local area, only the designated very high severity zones would require the moving and also the setback requirements. 511-82, which is 100-foot setback. They're more egregious setback requirements in the very high severity zone that's already exist in current law.
Okay, thank you.
I'll keep my mouth shut so you can go.
I have one question first. So in the, thank you for the package that you sent, Chief Rowe. I actually went through all of the versions of the law that was passed on this. You talked about the SRA. I guess I want to know in the Forest Service EPA, who's going to do these inspections?
Well, currently through CFMA, through the current CFMA, which has an extension that it tasks actually our federal partners with doing those inspections. However, typically they're not done, and we currently do those inspections in the federal responsibility area. We send our inspectors down to Happy Camp, and typically it's on a two-year rotation to get through the entire county. And so they go down there. I believe Happy Camp may have been done last year. If not, it will be done this year.
Yeah, I guess what I'm drawing attention to is in 1189 or 1187, whichever one talks about fines. I've got a real problem with the federal entity issuing fines on private land, which the Act seems to impose, because it does say the local agency is responsible for doing that.
Yeah, I've never heard of federal agencies imposing fines within their
DEA. No, but I mean, the state law says that they will. So, I'm going to take it in chunks. I obviously don't support this, and it's not personal.
Yeah, you know, it's not something, like I said, it's not something.
My issues are quite, actually, from a professional standpoint. I have a problem with the map, from the standpoint of if it were used for staffing increases, funding mechanisms, and those kinds of things, but it unfortunately is coupled to some pretty onerous infractions leading to misdemeanors, which is much more than a useful tool to either abate fire or to suppress fire or secure funding in high hazard zone areas. That's my major beef with the map. The other issue I have with the map too is that, so this was supposed to be rolled out in 2020, it's now 2025. the agency says they're going to look at the map every 5 years. It's taken 5 years to even roll it out. I really don't have any hope that it's going to be reviewed every 5 years. So all of the millions and millions of dollars of investment we made in the high hazard zones isn't going to be reflected. And therefore, my constituents are still going to be subject to cancellation of their insurance in those areas. That's a real issue for me, personally and professionally, when it comes to this. The map itself, some things I would say are glaring issues with it. The recent fires that we have are no longer high fire hazard areas, not for 10 to 15 years anyway, but the map doesn't reflect that. So to say that the map is interactive with conditions on the ground is just false. It's not current in time. And that's another major problem I have, because it becomes a disincentive for somebody to deal with it if it's not going to be reflected or rewarded. It's kind of like us in Salmon Hill, where we do all this work for fish, but we never get out of this jail. Same thing to me. I would beg the question, how or who is going to do the inspections for the building and building code? Because as I read the law, I can tell it was written by the Forestry Board, which I'm very well aware of as a licensed forester. It speaks to me. I know what they're saying. But unless we have a staff forester on call or on board in the county, I think that any assessment the county does is going to be reviewed. I mean, it's pretty loosely written from the standpoint, yes, it's 100 feet, but then it can be changed due to other circumstances. So who's going to make that determination? I certainly wouldn't as an RPF, because I'm hanging my shingle out there liability-wise a mile for somebody to litigate that. So I just don't see the practicality of being able to even implement this thing at the county level before it's been given to us. Some undefined things, 100 feet, 100 feet away. Is it slope distance? Is it horizontal distance? Makes a big difference if you live in Abbey Camp. You know, the law doesn't define. So keeping the law itself is pretty poorly written, in my opinion. So I absolutely don't support this thing. I also draw attention to the fact the same issue occurred in Oregon with their passage, and their Assembly and Senate recently repealed it, as well as all the regulations associated with it. And I would hope that the state comes to its senses too and does something with this too, because all this does is it gives more fodder to the insurance companies to continue to cancel insurance across the state. I got a lot more, but I'll yield.
No?
Yes.
So, in the red zones that are on the map, how many fire safe council or community fish removal projects have taken place in that, and how many millions of dollars have been spent on that reduction? And again, nothing personal here, but.
That's true. I don't have an answer for you. I know that there's, you know, I would say several and millions because there has been a lot of fuels work done in Siskiyou County, and the map does not account in the way that they did that. It's over a 30 to 50 year period of vegetation growth without that considered.
I don't know. I can't support this either. This is, you know, there's a new term out there called insurance foreclosure. And this is the door to that. It is. It's giving license to the insurance companies for cancellation or increased premiums with really no valid science. We're home hardening new homes. We've done veg removal, but again, no credit. And it's not unlike what Supervisor Howe brought up with regard to salmon recovery. We'll never get credit for what we do, but we just keep getting the goalposts move further down the road for more and more and more, and that's been hundreds of millions of dollars, and those
I don't know, the state fire marshal, we couldn't even get him or her, whoever it is, to give an okay on the Willow Creek School project for the new TK building. And yet they roll out something like this. And the consequence of that not being done timely was the $1 million grant they got for that TK room addition is now $1.5 million because of the delay factor. And State Fire Marshal was right in the mix of that. So they've got to prove to me that they've got science to provide this model that they've rolled out, because the elements of credit for good work done by homeowners and from subdivisions, it's not showing up in this map, and until I see that, I can't support it.
Sure. I'm just going to digress to my district where it's all in the severity zone. It is. It will be if we do any project. It just doesn't ever end. You just can't clear and think it's done. I will say this for the state of California. There's OES money coming through for home hardening, for clearing, for projects. So there's money being put in there. I support it from that aspect. To not have something on the books tells entities that are going to fund these kind of things, you don't have a map. I don't want to take that risk for my community. So I'm okay with the map, because it does fairly represent the hazard of something that I'm going to.
I agree with my colleagues that there's so many layers to this, as far as, you know, we've got federal standards we have to meet, we have state standards we have to meet, we have local standards that we have to meet within the cities. We're being told we have to meet these standards in all these different areas, and then we have a building code. And none of it matters except the building code. It all comes down to the building code. We can't build a house except for the building code. None of the rest of it really matters except for the building code. We can't build a house without that. So all the rest of it seems to be extra. My biggest concern with this, especially living within the city limits, and it doesn't really matter what city it is, because they all have to adopt their own ordinance around these maps, is that each city has their own rules, and then the county has their own rules. And I need to know that there's going to be some kind of consistency that goes along with the county's rules, the city's rules, because everybody's playing on a different ball field here. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of consistency there. If we adopt one ordinance with one set of rules, and somebody, some code enforcement officer goes out and says one thing, the city's going to have a whole different set of rules. And how lenient are they going to be? How strict are they going to be? What are the setback rules? What's the zone zero going to look like in Wairika compared to Weed? Every place we go, it's going to be a little bit different. And what kind of exceptions are there going to be? Are there going to be any exceptions? What is that going to look like? You know, there's neighborhoods here that have been established for 100 years, and it would be a real shame to have a landscape, a residential landscape, turn to, you know, what they're calling zone zero, which is absolutely nothing within 5 feet of a home. Nothing. Except dirt. That would be a shame. And if that's going to be enforced, whether it's in the county or a city, I just can't imagine that's going to be enforced. But what I'm hearing is that it will be. Whether it's a wood pile 30 feet away from a home, homes aren't even 30 feet away from each other. How can that happen? You know, there has to be some kind of leniency or some guidelines for people to work within. And that it's not being portrayed that way. So these are things that we need to really look at and really pay attention to before we just flop shoot this and come up with some better ideas as to how this could work instead of just making a straight across ordinance that says this is how it has to work. So I'm not a proponent of this until we can come up with some better ideas instead of just saying, well, you know, it just kind of depends. We'll have some ideas about how this can work. We'll talk about it. Well, everybody's going to have an idea, and if you have one guy that goes out and says, well, this is okay, well, the next guy that comes along and says, oh, no, you can't. It can't work that way. You have to have a better plan. So that's kind of where I'm going with it right now.
If I may, through the board.
Sure.
I think moving forward for this, looking at, as you said, the Zone Zero, we have proponents throughout the county that are actively participating in community wildlife protection plans that are a proponent of the Zone Zeros and what that looks like. So what I would like to see moving forward is what does it look like for us, for your staff, to set up something that does make this a little bit more palatable for us as a county. I think for us, there are some parts of this that are, as Supervisor Rosello said, the disaster risk reduction funding and the wildlife mitigation funding is, for us, important because that's what we're gonna go after, but I need to have something that we can bite into, that we have, this is our map, these are our high severity zones, and what can we do as staff to make that a little bit more palatable.
I guess the question I would have, though, is how would we, as a county, do that when the law prevents us from changing this map?
So is that writing ordinance into the map as existing with caveats? I think that's...
Well, but the law says you shall not reduce
wings. Right. Right.
Well, I'll bring up, for instance, when you have a city lot... residential lot that's broken into two severity zones.
Right.
And you have to go with the higher one. When the front yard is in one zone, the backyard is in another, it's hard. It's hard on a residential landowner, property owner, to deal with that. And when the neighbor's in the lower one, right next door, and then you have another property owner right next door that's in high, or very high, how does that, the maps are, you know, that makes it very, very difficult for residential property owners to deal with that.
Believe me, we've looked at this.
I
100% agree this map is terrible. And the more you zoom in, the worse it gets. So that's part of our thing, is part of what we want to know. We have to be able to look at that. And what does that look like throughout? We understand that part of it. Our GIS was completely overwhelmed with this, and with the short turnaround that the state gave us for this, was also, you know, that's that part that leads to believe that you're just supposed to adopt as is. But looking at that and looking at the future side of this, one of the things that we do need to do is we need more wildfire mitigation funding. We need more home hardening funding, and if the state's pledging it, then I want to go after it. And that's our stance on that. So whatever we need to do to make sure we can go after that, and whatever possibilities we can set forth on that.
Do you have some kind of a thought program about how you're working with the cities to help push these programs out so that property owners aren't just dealt with this? You know, they're just not handed a piece of paper that says, you must. So it's not, the onus isn't on the property owner to have this done by, you know, next January with all of that, you know, financial burden and the mechanics of it left just to the property owner. Because I see that as being our biggest hurdle, is that there's a lot of property owners out there that have spent 30, 40 years with landscaping and money put into their properties that cannot financially or physically just make this happen. What are we going to do with that?
I'll
address a little bit of that, just wearing my Cal Fire Unit Chief hat, and tell you how we address those issues within the SRA. So there are laws that state, hey, the 30 feet, you know, wood pile has to be so far away, things like that. But the effort is to make our communities more fire safe and those homeowners more fire safe. And so sometimes, you know, our elderly folks who need that wood pile closer to the house, there are other mitigating factors that we can utilize to come up with the same practical effect. They can put those wood piles in maybe a metal shed that protects it from embers, right? Because the idea of that wood pile being so close to the house is that embers get in that wood pile, create a fire hazard that catches the house on fire. We've also implemented things like using fire-resistant blankets or tarps, like canvas tarps that resist embers into wood piles and have them covered with that. We're definitely not out there looking to write misdemeanors on all those little things. We're out there trying to make the community more fire safe and educate them. So if they choose to move that wood pile someday, maybe they have the information of where it might be able to be moved to be more fire safe. And that's how we implement it within the SRA here in Siskiyou County. As far as other entities, you know, they get to adopt this as is with their laws. You know, like the city of Waterika gets to make that choice, and we're happy to provide them with the information of how you know, education, I guess you could say, on how we do our inspections to help guide them through this new process for them.
Through the chair. So I'll give you two specific examples that I personally have been around that gives me issue with this map. So my uncle's tire shop over in Fort Jones, right? They canceled his insurance, told him he's in an extreme fire zone. He's a metal building surrounded by irrigated compound. There is zero fire danger outside of within the home, its own self. That, to me, is a huge issue, right? That makes no sense. The insurance company wasn't even willing to look at the satellite imagery and acknowledge it. It's, boop, you're in a red area. No insurance. That's not acceptable. These new maps, when I saw Waterika's, I can see over where I live. I live in a stretch where there's brush on one side of the hill, brush on the other side of the hill. Nowhere near fire danger for me. It turns to yellow grass in the summertime. That's great. I have very little fire danger. I had, as Chief Rose knows, my boy started a little grass fire. I had it out with my tractor in about 10 minutes. I mean, it's not going to burn a home down. They have me in moderate, you know. These maps just don't fit. That's the problem. It's not that the map exists, it doesn't fit. And that has to be fixed so that people aren't, you know, my uncle shouldn't have to go through the California Fair Plan. That's ridiculous. That should be easily insured outside of, you know, an internal electrical fire. And I mean, there's tons of these stories and tons of these stories. And, you know, like we talked about the setbacks, I mean, you guys are getting ready to do a huge job over here. You know, that's not going to be factored in, but it absolutely should. And so until we get a reasonable map that actually takes into account everything that we have going, like, I don't see how we support it. You know, it has to fit. And, you know, yes, this is seen as a protection on the fire side. But we have to, you know, protect our constituents' mortgages and homes and you know, feasibility for insurance. So, you know, we're kind of stuck in a weird spot, but, you know, the best we can do right now is continue to protect their financial well-being and then, you know, push to continue to do these fire reduction measures. So, you know, I just figured to let you know where I stand on it. Something has to change with the map.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Natalie Reed, County Council. I do just want to make the board aware of the timeline that we are working with. The government code provides that the local agency shall designate by ordinance these fire hazard severity zones within 120 days of receiving the map from the state fire marshal. So our deadline is June 9th, 2025, that we shall adopt our ordinance. We have two regular board meetings left, May 20th and June 3rd. Go ahead, Wendy.
June 3rd would have to be the date because of the publication for the public hearing for the second reading. So we don't have May 20th as a date.
So for clarification, would the board be able to again consider the first reading on May 20th if necessary?
I believe so, because we've got enough time in May to publish. I can double check that though on a break just to verify.
Okay. So at any rate, we are facing the June 9th, 2025 deadline. And as noted in the government code, the local agency does not have the discretion to reduce fire hazard severity zones as recommended by the state fire marshal.
What if we shall not?
Then that would not meet government code 51179. It's required.
What are the consequences?
Natalie?
Yes.
If we took the first reading to the 20th, I still would not have time to publish in time for the 3rd, June 3rd. And we don't have another board meeting beyond that, or before the state's deadline.
And what is the publishing deadline for June 3rd?
Actually, it would have to be if we approve the first reading to go to a second reading public hearing on the 20th. The earliest I can get it published is the 28th of May, and it needs to publish typically for 10 days.
In non-newspapers.
Right.
Sorry.
Yes. I mean, our physical posting and putting it on our website doesn't take that long at all. It's the newspaper is the timing.
Through the chair, the only thing I can support today is demanding the state extend this. The fire marshal's had 4 years to work on this and rolls this out for 120 days for us. You know what? Fire marshal, sorry, you know, that's not even feasible. So that would be the only thing you could get support out of me today.
Certainly. I did have another question. So as I read through the law, worst case scenario, can you explain to me who or how, and you may not know, a lien on property would be imposed for not meeting the standards that's in the law?
I don't know specifically, but I would guess that that lien would come through, say somebody was in violation of not having their 100-foot clearance, we go through the misdemeanor process, it continues to be...
It said it would be recorded to the recorder's office.
Say that again?
It said it would be recorded at the, on the deed at the county.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that process. I've never been a part of that before or seen it done. So
yeah.
Typically... there are egregious violations where somebody's not making an effort on their property, right? Like, to go back to that compliance, you know, as long as we're seeing some sort of effort being made, we continue to work with those people. We don't impose those fines. If there is somebody that's egregious and just won't do anything, sometimes that citation is issued to try to get compliance. So, and that's as far as I've seen it go.
I just brought it up to make the public and whoever's listening aware that there is a process to lien your property involved with the law that was passed associated with this map.
I guess, for us, looking to the board for direction, obviously, we've been tasked with trying to come up with an ordinance by the law, and so we spent a lot of time and effort talking and trying to come up with the best scenario we could for you. And so just moving forward, I guess, ask what your wishes are for us in our work moving forward.
From my perspective, through the chair, you can notify the state fire marshal that this is not feasible, that they have to do better work and they have to give us time to work it out. No one during the 4 years has come to this board to work out the details of this map.
Great.
I mean, I'm sorry, but if the state legislature or whatever agency decides to make raping 12-year-olds legal, you mean to tell me you bring that before this board and ask us to adopt it just because the state passed it? You basically will get an H-E-L-L no out of me. Just because the state legislature doesn't know what they're doing doesn't mean that we have to accept it. And this is wrong. If the insurance companies would give credit for the work that's done in what home hardening or veg removal, then I can go there. But at the rate that this is going, this is punitive. It's an unfunded mandate that places homeowners in a predicament that they won't be able to afford their insurance. And they can't get credit for doing work. Besides the fact that we're going to be talking about later on here that a condition of a lot split is going to require potentially a timber harvest plan, which I'm sure isn't $500. So even if you had veg removal and you had to have a timber harvest plan to meet this demand, how do people afford that? They can't.
So for me, there's three things. The map has to be accurate, for one, and interactive in real time. The law needs to be amended to reflect some caveat that whoever's doing the certification is not going to be wrapped up in the lawsuit. You know, most things, like in my profession, if I use my license and I go out and I do a logging job, I certify at the time when I leave that operation that it's compliant with state law. Can't come back on me 2 years later once the vegetation regrows and say, no, it doesn't meet standards. So there's nothing in this law that protects the certifying official from either ingrowth or neglect after they do the inspection. There's no time limit on it. So that, I think that's key in being able to implement anything on the ground and able to get anybody who has a license to actually do the certification. The other thing to me, too, is I don't agree with the lien process and the other things. This thing, the way it's currently written, is a kiss of death for homeowners.
Yeah. Agreed.
Once you're in, you can't get out.
Yeah.
And it's a permanent reduction in your property value as a result of that. The disclosures, you know, even if, yeah, my house is pretty darn fireproof, but I would have to disclose that my house is a high hazard if I sell it, according to what this law is written. That reduces my selling price, I can tell you. Anytime you put that on a real estate transaction, your home goes down in value. And I think that's whoever wrote this did not think about the unintended consequences. And it needs to be revisited by the state. That's more than three things, but
can we just put District 2 in a fire hazard map? Because I can tell you my constituents worry about fire and mitigation and all that stuff. And we're getting funding through the state, and the last thing I want to do is put that at risk. Because the reality of it is insurance is not going to go down, it's going to only go up. People, when we talk about liens and all that stuff, you know, and I'm not discounting where my fellow board members are, but the reality is I got people complaining because someone isn't doing something on the property and it's affecting where they are, you know, that kind of thing. I have no doubt that my insurance company is going to come by because 3 years is about up. I've done all I can to mitigate, but I know a real world experience when they had the fires down in Redding. CHP company said, you know, I had this neighbor did all this work, fire came and pancaked it. It's just the reality of what we deal with and this severity that we're dealing with. And so, I don't want to discount what you're saying, but what I'm afraid is we're going to say no, and we're going to take ramifications for not adopting something that is not perfect. I don't disagree with that at all. They never are perfect. But that's just why I'm representing my district.
So why can't we press for more time so that we can engage on this?
I fully get that, but my problem is we're up against the 11th hour here. Yeah. You know, to me, you know,
that's how the state operates. They put you right in the squeeze, and then you've got to make a move, or you know, you're in trouble. I'm tired of it. I'm willing to work with them, but they didn't work with us for 4 years before they rolled this out.
And I'm just telling you where I'm at. You know, I think this is where we need to be a little bit more proactive. Again, it's easy to say this. What, you know, we had a natural resource person. I can almost say we needed someone who's just following the law, the things that are coming through, just like the, our regarding probation or the you know, making us aware. We have to lobby. We have to be down there talking to our new state senator or our new state assemblywoman. I mean, and they have to clue us in what's coming down the pike. We cannot, you know, we are being reactionary. We're not being proactive here. And that puts us in a bad spot. And it's never fun to make, have to make not the best decisions. Again, I'm just telling you where I am with my district and what I'm dealing with.
I would, the only, and I don't disagree with you, other than what good does the medication do when you don't get credit for it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I understand what you're saying. It's just, it's unfortunate that even, you know, going through the process and doing all the work, there's going to be no beneficial result other than your house won't burn down. But can you afford it in the meantime?
Well, in my worldly view, the way things are going, rural county particularly, and I'm going to use my district as an example, we'll be lucky anyway to get insurance. And the FAIR plan isn't fair. It's an unfair plan.
Yeah.
And so basically, you're going to force people like me to, well, I guess I'm just going to get general liability insurance for the property, bro. I'm taking the risk. The risk is on you. And as you well know, we've had fires where people can't afford and they lose everything.
But state regulation is driving that. That's the whole problem. It's not the landowner. The state is driving the regulation.
The state's trying to do something. I'm not disagreeing. I'm not disagreeing that they're doing it wrong. What I'm saying is that, and use the Palisades fire down in L.A., $1 billion, and they're going to the state. They're big enough where they're going to get some remuneration. We can't. We're too small to get to reach a threshold where they're going to come in and bail us out.
Yeah.
So again, the risk, we already have the risk.
But you have one of the wealthiest areas in the state with insurance and still looking for a $1 billion bailout. What do you think, like you say, what are the chances for us?
Well, again, they're going to get it, we're not.
And I
realize that.
So, I don't know what job between you two.
But go ahead.
So, and I'm not going to refute anything that's been going on, but I do want to bring a little more information that I know. As I look at this issue across the state, participation with the task force, I put the task force because the governor chose to invest most of the money where the wells were. I don't agree with that, and that's why the fire map drives me nuts. My chief complaint with the fire map is Siskiyou County has the highest cost per acre of fire suppression, largely because of public lands and inaccessibility. Should be a high priority to spend a heck of a lot of money here to prevent that if you're going to put in money to save money at the state level in the overall budget standpoint. But that's not the way it is. Recent example, I use my district outside of Scott Valley. The biggest threat to my community is the Forest Service, you know, flat out, and lack of management. What's the one thing that would help? Fuel breaks. Big fuel breaks, where we could suppress fire, contain fire on a smaller scale before it grows to the size it does and overwhelms our communities. Yet, the state chose to partner with the timber companies, and guess where those fuel breaks stopped? At Redding. Nothing north of Redding. So, there again, conclusive evidence to me that the state's only going to put its money where the books are, which doesn't do a damn thing for my constituents.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Now the Reed County Council, I do want to respond to your question because you had asked, you know, what happens if we don't adopt this. So when the board has a mandatory statutory duty to take a certain action, you know, statutes that use the word shall, and the board does not take that action, then the board can be subject to a petition for writ of mandate, where a petitioner goes to the court and says, the board has this mandatory duty, hasn't done it, and then the court can issue an order to the board to take that action. the government code section 5.1179 at subsection C does require that the local agency shall transmit a copy of the ordinance adopted pursuant to subdivision A, which is the section that requires action within 120 days. And that needs to be sent to the State Board of Forestry and Fire Protection within 30 days of adoption. So the state will be aware of the inaction of the county based on its failure to send in the required ordinance if it does not move forward with adopting the map.
This is criminal, and I won't be part of it. So there. I don't care what the code says. The legislature has set this up to punish landowners, boards of supervisors, city councils, just to fit a certain mandate for the state. The shall part doesn't carry weight with me anymore. I'm open to a dialogue with the state fire marshal to fix this map. Otherwise, our constituents aren't going to be able to afford their homes.
How much of this ordinance is open to change?
Well, essentially, the main provisions that you need is adopting the map.
So can we just move this along, and I'm going to make the motion only for my own constituents who can vote it down and move on from this. I'll make the motion. You guys can say no, because, I'm afraid of at risk is the funding through OES to the state of California, the things that they are doing in my district, and that's what I'm afraid of losing. If
it took 10 years to get the fuel break up there above Mount Shasta. So why is it, you know, your district is just like everybody else's district, except there was a pushback on that project.
Supervisor Kossoff, I'm just trying to move this along because I see where you guys are at. This is not going to get through. But again, I got grants at risk. Home hardening in Dunsmuir.
Home hardening has to be accomplished regardless.
Supervisor Kossoff, can I finish, please? I just try to move this forward because we're spending way too much time for something that obviously isn't going to move forward. And so I'm just making on the record that I supported my community for all the grants, all the opportunities that we may miss out on because we didn't approve this.
That the recommended motion
yes.
is on the worksheet. Thank
yeah.
you.
I have a question.
Okay.
So you said the motion was just to adopt the map, but doesn't that also come with the remainder of the regulation?
So the county group that worked on this added language about what happens if there's multiple designations for a single parcel. And so the language about multiple designations is your team's recommendation about how to interpret a multi-zone parcel. That is not required by the state. All that's required is that you adopt their recommendations, their recommended zones, and map without reducing any severity zones.
I guess my question was, it also comes with all the state regulation behind the map, requiring the inspections, the certifications, the fines,
yes.
the fees, and all that.
Yes, Government Code Section 51182 has the defensible space and other requirements which are associated with the very high fire hazard severity zones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's current law, though, correct?
Yes.
It is current law.
That is current law.
Yeah, just for the record, because I don't support the map, it has nothing to do with whether or not I support grants or agreements or fire hardening in the county. Those two things are not equivalent. Right? To me, I could dedicated most of my life to fighting this garbage. And I'm not going to stop now.
Through the chair.
Yes.
I just want to tack on to what Natalie spoke of with 51182. It's current law and something we will have to struggle with internally with the building department because we are required to provide certification to a property owner that the home hardening, the buoy standards have been met, and also the other stuff that we're not really qualified to do. you are working with CAL FIRE to bridge those gaps. In addition to that, it requires that we supply that to any insurance company that asks for it.
That's with or without this ordinance, though. No matter what.
Correct. It's already in law.
Right.
So we'll have to deal with that same issue with the map and the zones internally.
But see, even with what this proposal, even if you provide this to the insurance company that they're home hardened, that they're veg removed, you know, that everything is in place, there is no credit from the insurance company to that landowner. And that's the biggest problem that this map opens the door to. That's why I'm open to discussing it. But if you, if we do this proposal like this, we're putting landowners at risk. Because no matter what work they do, no matter what grants they receive, they're not going to get credit for it because they're not already getting credit for it in this model.
And that's already happening. That people are doing all this work, they're not getting credit.
I understand.
Again, insurance rates are not going down. They're not going to get credit for anything. They're only going to go up.
Well, the only credit that I know of that people get through insurance is if they're a party to a FireWise community. That's the only benefit.
I disagree with my colleague on that insurance rates are going to continue to go up. They can't. They can, but they can't because homeowners, it's going to go to what I called earlier, insurance foreclosure. Doggone insurance is going to be higher of payment than your mortgage and people won't be able to afford it and they're going to bail. So they have to come back to where it's reasonable for homeowners to have insurance. Nobody's against the grants. Nobody's against what work can be done. This map is wrong. That's what we're pointing out. The time frame is wrong, and that has to be corrected.
So we have a motion on the table.
And that didn't pass, but that's long gone. So I would just say, can we just do whatever we're going to do and move on because we're spending way too much time to talk about something
that's what we're here for.
That we don't agree
to. We get paid to be here for doing just what we're doing. Not that if it took 4 hours, so what?
Well, then let's spend 4 hours and do the map. I'm okay with that, too. I mean, it's just obvious that we're not going to pass this. So what do we give waste our time for? No one here in the public is raising their hand to chime in. I don't see anyone on there. I don't see our state representatives here. I see, just us trying to do something that obviously we're not in agreement with.
So what action would we like to see? What direction would we like to take? What would we like to ask?
There needs to be an extension on the time frame, and the map has to be adjusted.
I would suggest that from the board stating our ask. A letter to the state fire marshal stating our issues, both with the map and the continued path this is likely to take in our county, and ask for some kind of revision or relief.
And you have to extend the time. We have to have time to deal with that.
I think, and in that letter, I think it's important for us to point out a lot of counties don't have so much public land surrounding their communities, and that's a complication that, as I read through the law, is not articulated very well, but it does complicate the playing field we have to deal with.
This may be a tough ask within that, but what we can accept. I mean, we need to put specific to,
sure.
to because otherwise sending a letter to Maria just doesn't work. It's just going to get right filed. And, I want to get something out of it anyways.
I think from my perspective, the home hardening is a good thing. It's the inspection process and fines and the rest of that stuff imposed upon the county to pay for and be liable for that's difficult.
And part of this goes, my soapbox, we have a lot of volunteer fire departments. We can't manage the fire zones that we have now. We talked about, and I forget when the state came out with a fee, and it was some years back, so it was about stuff, you remember. Why aren't we a county unified fire district like San Bernardino, so we're not in a state responsibility area, we're in a local responsibility area? What are the things that we can do for thinking, doing that? I'm still hoping that we consolidate fire departments. I mean, all that is associated with risk. There's zones within, what do they call this?
But even...
I know this, when I was in the city of Massachusetts, we're within a... No, it's a rating, 3, 5, 10, 1 to 10 things or so for insurance.
Yeah. You're an SO rating?
SO rating, there you go. Yeah. I mean, all that's, you know, things that we can do that, you know...
I don't disagree with that, but when you look, let's just take on the map. We in Mount Shasta alone, and you look at the carve-out on that red, those are within fire districts. And we still don't get credit for that. That's my whole point. Yeah. You can point us into, a high severity zone if there's no fire district, if there's no removal, if there's no home marking. I get it. But the map goes right to the heart of the places that have done the best work. So, again... and the letter, if it is going to the state fire marshal, I don't know, it needs to go to the Board of Forestry, it needs to go to our representatives, it needs to go to CSAC and RCRC, that we need time and we need a readjustment. You know, this map is incorrect for the work that's been done, at least in these red zones that are there now.
But the other, another aspect that needs to be included in that letter is some clarification with what's the joint? The people that negotiate the SRA, the board that does that, they need to clarify the roles between the DPAs when it comes to executing this law.
In the CFMA.
Yeah. Because, in your response to me, it's pretty clear. Half my district's just kind of hanging out there. I know you're volunteering to do some of that, but that's probably not appropriate.
Okay, so we have what we need to move forward.
I guess. And I can... we can talk.
All right. And Chief, you have a direct line to the State Fire Marshal, just communicate, look, this is problematic.
Sure. I don't have a direct line, but I can surely push it up through my chain of command.
How can it be direct line so we can have a sit-down meeting?
Yeah.
I go down to Sacramento often enough,
Yeah, I can push up through my boss your concerns and see what we can arrange through the State Fire Marshal and the Board of Forestry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
So my question is, what's the disposition of this agenda item? No action taken?
So there was a motion made. There was no second. The
correct.
Motion died. No action taken.
Okay.
Okay. Do we need a break room?
Yes,
no,
I do. Thank you.
Thanks. I still want to get out of here.